We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email john@nufcmatters.com to arrange today.
Hush now, city kids, gather round for other men's. Hush now, city kids. When it came to me after so long, I didn't have no choices in the streets where I was from. When I think about the pain, I didn't have no choices. I took what I had sworn. Hush now, city kids, gather round for robbing meds. Hush now, city kids.
Good evening, welcome to NUFC Matters. Geordie's here, Geordie's there, Wednesday night, and the barman is in the bottom row there, being punished. The bar's not open, Sam. No, the bar is not open, and we're not starting with their UB40 red wine tonight, but we are going to talk about Newcastle United. Breaking news, something we talked about, I guess, for the last few weeks about his form and about how he hadn't been able to perform maybe as well as we thought. Was there an underlying issue? Well, now we've had confirmation, Mitch, today that Sven Botman will undergo surgery next week after suffering a knee injury against Man City. A scan has confirmed he sustained an injury to his ACL and he's expected to return within 6 to 9 months. Confirmation that this is a new injury, Mitch, but I think we've all had doubts and we've certainly mentioned it on this show, you know, that maybe something wasn't right with the knee, full stop. It may well be a new injury, and that's what the club are saying, and they're sticking to it. But I just can't help but think
that if my grandma had wheels, she'd be a bike. My God. I'm fuming. I'm sitting fizzing. This is this last half hour before coming on, I've been sitting revving me, really graining me gears. It may be a new injury, in inverted commas, but there's absolutely no way that that's been helped by playing a number of games, I think 16 games, on a knee that nobody could decide when it was initially injured if there was a full tear in a ligament or not. Ligaments don't heal themselves. We've called this all along. It would need an operation at some stage. I'm quite sure he was scheduled probably to go for an operation at some stage. And now it's 6 to 9 months. We should have bit the bullet early on. And I think we all called it. Some of the discussions I've had around it with sports medicine physicians, some of them have questioned why did he play two games knowing it wasn't right, and put some onus on the player too. Does that just reflect a desperation to do well, keep his place in the team and play on? But that's why you never trust players when you ask them, are you fit or not? You know, the old school way of doing it, like my dad's talked about a couple of times, really doesn't apply anymore. We should have cleverer and better medicine than that. Surely somebody associated with a club can get hold of a sports physician who can say, is this knee fucked or not? And that's the medical term. And we should be looking at it. We need an absolute root and branch review of how our players are being cared for on the back of a season of unprecedented injuries, the likes of which we should never see again, and we should be pulling the stops out to ensure we never see again. And to lose this young man for 6 to 9 months, what does this do to his career? He's not looked right. I don't care what anybody says. He's not looked himself. He's played tentatively. He's been off the pace at times. He's looked like he was trying too hard sometimes, but also he had zero confidence. And if you're playing with an injury, I suspect, Kev may put more input into that in terms of the mindset of a player who knows he's playing with something that's dodgy. Do they become the self-fulfilling prophecy? Do they end up injuring themselves because they're trying to protect themselves, and that means they're not going into tackles at full belt? They're not doing the things they normally do. And so, I'm really quite angry with the handling. We've got a Rolls-Royce Defender that right now is currently being serviced by whoever put together the three-wheeler at Trotters Independent Traders. That's what it feels like. It feels like we've done an oil change on a Ferrari and put coconut oil in it. That's just what it feels like to me, and I'm fizzing.
George, disappointing news. This 6 months is bad enough, but it could be as long as 9 months before he's back, which takes us to Christmas next season.
News already mentioned how in the day we used to have a guy, as the physio called, Alec Much, and if you went to St James's Park, he used to stand in the tunnel during the match with his big white coat on. And if anybody went in, whether you were first team, second team, junior team, and claimed you were fit after you'd had an injury, he knew where to put his thumb. Just to shut the door. And if you heard a scream, coming out of the room, you knew you weren't playing. And if it was all right, you played. I know that's brutal, but that's the kind of, that's the kind of cynical view Alec had about players saying, I'm fit, I want to play. Because sometimes it did worse. Now, everybody on this platform, everybody has been saying how concerned they were about him. And it has shown in his play. There are two or three times that he's let burn down because he wasn't there backing up. And that was because he was being tentative and not actually doing it the way he was doing things before he had the injury. And there's no doubt about it in my mind, and having been there myself a long time ago, when you've got a serious injury, whether you like it or not, your mind says, whoa, hold on, hold back an extra yard, hold back a couple of seconds, don't do that quite so hard as you might. And the result is you injure yourself. Sadly, that's usually the result. Your being tentative just gets you more injury. And I think that's what's happened to this Sven Botman. And that it's a disgrace that in this day and age, they couldn't find somebody who could say, no, he's not playing. Never mind what he says. No, he's not fit. And goodness gracious, all the money they spend on these players. What about a few grand to see a top specialist to get a diagnosis? A diagnosis that tells you what to expect if he plays on. What to expect if this happens or that happens? We don't seem to have followed that. So he's absolutely right. Whatever happens in our medical room at the moment needs to change, and change rapidly, because it's producing things which are smell of half-heartedness, being pragmatic. It's not quite as bad as the Steve Bruce run it off cry from the touchline, but it's not far away. And the result, we've seen the result. The result's even worse. You feel for the lad, feel for the team, and for the supporters. We have got a Rolls Royce Defender, and he's not even an Austin 7 now. I mean, we're really damaging long term for the club with this kind of thing. And preventable is all I'd say. Preventable in my view, and I'm just like everybody else, surprised and slightly disgusted that it's happened in the way it has. And let's pray for the lad to see he gets back to where he was when he's fully fit again. So I'm sure he will, because he's dedicated. He's a dedicated trainer and all the rest of it. And if he puts his dedication into getting fit, I'm sure he will, and we'll see Sven Botman again. Shouldn't be like this, lad. Shouldn't be like this.
Yeah, it's just disappointing news. One of your key players, Kev, is now out for you know, a big period of time. You know, and there's no doubt about it. When Botman came, we were all absolutely, you know, outstanding with his ability. Many of us said this is probably the best centre half that we've seen in our time. You know, it's understandable people are disappointed, and I guess people do want answers to questions, because there has been some really strange injuries, but I think it's just a recovery. And I think the thing that's in my mind is when Eddie Howe did that press conference a few weeks ago now, he did say that there was issues which they were sorting out internally, and he did mention the work that they've done in the gym. So you just have to wonder whether there has been an issue. And of course, we saw a member of the medical team leave. So that, you know, it's no wonder that, you know, people like ourselves who do podcasts are talking about this, because it is a concern if it's a regular occurrence that, you know, amongst other players getting injured, you know, and then not recovering. And add to that, we've heard that Sean Longstaff is playing with injections, not something that's unusual in football, something that's, you know, probably gone on for many, many years since injections, you know, were deemed appropriate to try and get extra games out of people. But we know Longstaff is playing with that. So again, who makes that decision? The medical team, I would presume. The player has to agree to have it done if he wants to play. But I think that's why we're all sitting here a little bit, you know, but, you know, I don't know, scratching our heads a little bit about this current situation, and disappointed that one of our best players is now going to be unavailable until December.
Exactly. Couldn't agree more. And basically, you've got to look at training practices from a strength and conditioning perspective, a recovery perspective, all of the above. Every ounce of that sports science team, every bit of the medical team. We've even got a hydration pool in there just because we had to get one in there instead of a wheelie bin with ice and water in it, or a paddling pool. You know, that's how bad it is. So the ownership were forced to do all these upgrades, and look what the upgrades have done. The main part of that upgrade is the actual people who are doing the job and who are actually facilitating these programs, what the head coach and medical staff and the head doctor put into place for these players, A, to get fit, and B, to recover. You know, with the Sven Botman thing, is it an overuse? Was it wrongly diagnosed? Or did he even have a strain at all? Or, again, there's too many questions for us to all answer here in an hour. We could go on just one hour talking about this injury itself. Again, I agree with Mitch. It should have been dealt with sooner. Get him under the knife and get him to where he needs to be with a top specialist somewhere around the world. That's what needs to happen, and they need to find the best in the world to fix this problem, because, again, and I totally agree, from a psychological standpoint, he's not going to be at his full playing at his full potential, knowing that he's got to have played at a high intensity. He's got to be pressing. He's got to be tackling. He's got to be, you know, the workload that they get put under from whatever it is, 10 to 12, 10 to 1 every day, then go play a game against Man City, who are the best team in the world. No wonder you're going to pick up these overuse injuries and the longer term injury. That's just how that goes. So again, you've got to look at the training patterns and the periodization, what the first team staff do. Is he actually playing? Is he actually in full-time training like Sean Longstaff? Is he actually kicking the ball? What's he doing in the gym? What's that workload look like? Is he lifting 100 kg every time he's in the gym on that knee? And that's going to make it worse. You know, so there's, again, like I said, there's a lot of questions. But again, with the psychological thing, I think, and you've seen it, and I think most of us have seen it, Steve Hasey and George, especially because you sit together and argue about it and see it more than we do. Yeah. Defensively, that there's a lot of frustration, a lot of anger in there. And I think that comes across, even though he might be barking at a goalkeeper or barking at somebody, there's some frustration and anger in there because he knows. Everybody knows their body better than anybody themselves, than anybody else, sorry. If I've got a knee injury, yes, I want to play. Of course I do. But are you really going to, in a high-level, intense game, are you really, really going to play? Because you know, as a footballer or anybody, if it goes, it goes, and it's going to go properly. And you're going to be out for a very long period of time. And then now this scuppers potential Euro 24 aspirations that he could potentially have. All sorts of little caveats within this injury could scupper his career further down the line. He's going to lose pace. He's going to lose the ability to turn quickly. He's going to lose a lot of things and attributes into his game, all based on that. People in behind the scenes can't adopt what or do their job properly, essentially. Plus, there's a lot under the player. I understand that. But for the most part, the medical staff should have basically just said, no, you're not playing. And took the baton and said, look, we need you for the here and now, not for 10 months potentially down the road. But again, the recovery time, yes, 6 to 9 months, but that's just that's a very, very broad framework. It could be longer than that based on how the surgery goes. Does he break down again? Does the actual ACL go again? You know, does the other one go? Whatever. Does his meniscus go? Does his medial ligaments go either side? And then what's his structure like? There's all sorts of different things that could occur. So again, it's very disappointing. But again, my last point is, obviously now centre-half's a must in the summer. We needed one anyway, but I think this is now putting a nail in the coffin that we actually need one.
Yeah, I mean, we need so many positions strengthened. But this is a huge blow. It really is. Al Waleed, you know, we were talking knees last week. You know, you were talking from a physio's perspective, and you know, this is a huge blow for Newcastle. You know, for the last 10 games of this season, but also for the first half of next season.
Of course, it's shocking news. We are not looking, or it's very hard to judge or blame it to somebody for this injury. I think if it's happened suddenly, it's different than we have, like, kind of red flag when you have that injury misdiagnosed. If you remember when he played against Sheffield, you can feel there is something not quite right in dealing with the Butman injury. My guess is it's two things. It's sometimes with these injuries, actually, I don't recall the right tackle or incident with Manchester City player, but usually I believe this in this condition, this ACL happened gradually with some partial tear. Maybe he doesn't know about. We are not familiar how Newcastle deal with this. Is it daily basis? We don't know how the team of the medical team works, but I believe they are professional. They know what they do, supposedly. So I believe it's happening gradually, but other reason is the way we play. Of course, you all notice that Butman, of the beginning of the season or last season, you can feel he's exhausted because the team play in a way, there is a pressure on every player in play. They are struggling. We didn't have that solid midfielders. Usually midfielders are, I consider it with my understanding of football, it's like filtering the attack, because we receive so many pressure the whole time against the defense line. And the midfielder, I don't think they are defending really or helping the defender line to avoid this kind of a pressure. So I hope, it's hard lesson, of course. I'm sure there is kind of mistake happens, but I wish him safe return.
Yeah, we all do that. Stu, Botman out, another injury blow.
Well, I'm in agreement with what George said. maybe due to injury. I'm wondering if the medical team have told Eddie Howe, yeah, he's maybe what he's wanted to hear. Yeah, he's fit. You know, when you've got that many injuries at the same time, yeah, he's closer than what he is. Because we all know the players will say they want to play and they're ready to play. So, yeah, with a bit of caution, he could play. But he hasn't looked right for the last few months. But hindsight's a wonderful thing. And we'll have to take the positives out of it. And I think by the time he does return, hopefully with a full rehabilitation, I can't even say it now, I'm drinking vodka for the cold. That was one of the advice I got. Neat. That's right, Dr. Neil, see? Rehab, we'll call it.
I'd write you a prescription if I could.
Is what, sorry?
I'd write you a prescription for it if I could, mate.
No, it's all right. I've got some. It's, the thing is, when I was across there, I got the cold from Steve Hastie. I got a hangover from Steve Wraith, and I got this from the heat. So I think he'd give us the best gift. So anyway, what I was saying was he'll come back better. And if he comes back to his excellence as he was, then long-term it's going to be it's a good thing for us. But you know what? Niggling in the back of my mind is Eddie Howe only said last week about Sean Longstaff that he was playing when he was injured. And it makes you ask, like, how many more are doing it and how many more are putting themselves at risk for the greater good of the team sort of thing? Because I reckon Gordon's been playing through an injury or a niggle, shall we say. And I believe that Joe Linton has and Trippier has as well, just from the way they've played and then the way they've been injured. But I'm not a doctor, so that's just my own personal view of it. Maybe we do need a new training complex, and maybe that will come with a new sponsor, and everything happens for a reason, as they say. But Botman being injured is bad news, but I think in a season littered with injury bad news, it's another one we've just got to accept. And I think we've got enough cover there, whether it be not of his quality, but we've all seen he hasn't been at his best quality in the last few weeks. So whether that be Lascelles, who I thought had a decent game against Man City, whether it be give young Alex Murphy a chance, whether it's Kraft, whether it's Dummett, there's cover there. And this is goes to something that we were saying the other day. We do have cover there, but we don't have cover if Isak gets injured. So although we don't want any injuries, if we had to take one, that would be one of the positions we'd say, okay, we'll take that if you had a choice against a forward getting injured. Just wish him well, wish him a speedy recovery, and I'm sure you'll get as much support from us as fans and from these colleagues as well. Because he looks like he's immersed himself to be a popular member of the squad. So they'll get him through it.
Hopefully. Yeah, Magnus, welcome back. You've had a little trip away. How was your holiday?
Oh, it's absolutely lovely, you know. And I actually, you know, with all the ticketing that we've been talking about, you know, I found it amazing that you can just get a ticket to, you know, an NBA basketball game the very same day as you enter. You know, this ticketing system, you know, was amazing to me because there's always somebody wanting to release a ticket, and there's always somebody else needing a ticket. So. I was astonished by the NBA and the Ticketmaster system, finding a ticket even on the back-to-back matches that I went to. But yeah, I had a lovely holiday, and still I'm worrying about the question you asked. If Botman is out for 6 to 9 months, is that the newest on the case?
It's just been literally just been announced before we came on. It's official that he has to have surgery on the knee. It's a new, it's an ACL, and it's a new tear. It's a new injury. It's not the same injury. That's the confirmation that we've had. And the surgery will take place. The operation will take place, and the recovery time is between 6 and 9 months. So December could be the next time we see Sven Botman.
My word. I mean, I'm absolutely devastated to hear that. You know, he's been a fantastic servant to the club so far, and he's only getting started as far as I'm concerned. On the other hand, you know, I am, and I've mentioned this before on the show, that, you know, this is starting to remind me a little bit of the times that when Graham Souness was in charge of the club. It was absolutely endless injuries, and I'm starting to question a little bit whether there is some problem within inside the club. We had numbers of that affected his legacy with the club. We also heard that, like, on the press conference about Longstaff, he's been carrying an injury and he still played the game, you know. So I've never really wanted to question Eddie Howe's methods, but I am starting to get a little bit annoyed and concerned about whether we are pushing them too hard, or, you know, for me, we already had a solution after last game. After watching Lewis Hall play left back, I'm thinking, why are we not playing just Fabian Schär and Jamal Lascelles? Because he had a few really good games this season, and I know we like to have a left foot and a right foot center back, but you know, sometimes we just don't have a choice. On the other hand, also I've said it before on the show, Dan Byrne can and is for me naturally a really good center back, so I think pushing them too hard has now cost us, and I'm very upset to hear these news.
Yeah, it is disappointing. Steve, come to you before we go to the ads. Another big injury in a season full of injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. George said it was preventable. I think it was inevitable. Been waiting for this announcement since probably December. Anyone who watched his performance, anyone watched the tentative nature, the way that he was playing, protecting himself. When you heard what the original injury was and the misdiagnosis that obviously had occurred, it was inevitable this would be the outcome. What I would say is that let's just take Emil Kraft as an example. You look at his recovery period, and it was nearer 12 months. And then came back and then you develop other injuries. You go back to 2 days ago and you look at the videos of Tyrone Mings, and you look at the loss of muscle structure on his leg, as he's now into what is possibly his eighth month of recovery. And we're talking about 6 to 9 months. Come on. And it is very interesting. As somebody just put on the strap line there, that Newcastle are saying it's a new injury. Yeah, it's a new injury because it's just happened. But let's face it, the lad's been carrying a knee problem since last September, October. And as cows are cows, it was going to happen. It was going to go eventually. It was going to blow up, and it has blown up. People have mentioned there about players, and players know their own bodies. Well, if you want to talk about the footballer knowing his own body, then you just have to read the Paul McGrath autobiography, where he explains that, he didn't play, he didn't train all week. He just stayed in the gym. He just did a little bit of physio work, and then he would decide whether or not he could play on a Saturday. That was after he left Man United, after Man United decided that he was on the scrap heap. And I think he ended up playing 256 games for something like that for Aston Villa, you know, with no training. And I think he got more caps for the Republic of Ireland during that period than he did in the intervening time that he was at Manchester United. So, players do know their own bodies. But it's quite interesting as well that this has also came up on the strap there, that Sven's been speaking on Sky Sports News, and he said the last thing he wanted was an operation. So has he been convinced in his own head that he didn't need one? Has he convinced the doctors that he didn't need one? Have the doctors looked at it and said, well, it's not quite gone, we might get away with this? Quite frankly, it was inevitable what happened. I don't think we'll see him before Christmas. I think we could be heading into next February, March, before we see the real Sven Botman, if we see the real Sven Botman at all.
Before we go to the ads, Steve, can I give everybody a depressing stat?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. It's funny, I was looking at this yesterday for a very different reason. Wide receivers in the NFL are the ones who get ACL injuries the most. In the last 3 years, there's been 31 who at the time were top 10 wide receivers, received ACL injuries. Only 6 returned to the top 10 the following year after the injury, and only 9 in the second year after the injury. That means there's 16 of those 31 never returned to form after the ACL repair.
Yeah. And can I also add that there is from the experience of just my nephew who did his ACL last year, the specialist that looked after him said, if you kick a ball before 9 months, I will inevitably see you again. And if you kick a ball within 5 months, then I think you probably only got a 10 to 15% chance. If you keep going and keep going and keep going until I tell you that you don't kick, that you can start to kick a ball with, when I give you the okay, I'll probably never see you again. Otherwise, on a sliding scale, and it's quite common in the women's game at the moment, the ACL, it's the big conversation piece. And you look at the number of those girls that have come back after 5, 6, 7 months, and then you see some of them that have gone down again with a further ACL injury. It tends not to become from a knock. It tends to come from an overstretch. It tends to come from a twist, a turn, a catch in the foot in the turf. It was soaking wet on Saturday. Whether we didn't see Botman go down, but whether at some point in time he caught his studs and that was the last thing he needed to do. But Newcastle United have now got to sort themselves out medically. They've now got to ask the questions internally. And while they're doing that, they've also got to go out and find a replacement. That's the difficult part they have now.
Yeah, it certainly is. Halfway through the show, we'll be back after the ads. A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Go to their website, skipsandbins.com. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com or telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Go to their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Email info@mrvickys.co.uk. or telephone 01768 210102. Thanks to United Group Travel. Go to their website, unitedgrouptravel.com. Email info@unitedgrouptravel.com or phone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. They're a local company from Morpeth and there are no strangers on our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Big thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And if you want to subscribe to the channel, hit the subscribe button under the video. Click the thumb up to like the video and click share to share to your social media. If you want to help the channel financially, you can pay a one-off £25 fee. You get a cup, a scarf, a pen and a membership card and entry into the NUFC Matters monthly draw. Email john@nufcmatters.com for more details. Or if you've got a smartphone, scan the QR code now and it takes you straight to the membership pack. We also support the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk and you'll find the matchday bucket. You can make a donation virtually today. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify and other podcast providers. We also do events during the year. NUFC Matters Live will be at the O2 City Hall on Friday the 2nd of August for an evening with Rob Lee, One Night in Antwerp. Tickets start at £15 and you can get them from Ticketmaster.co.uk. An evening with the entertainers takes place on Friday the 24th of January 2025 at the Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle. Telephone 0844 249 1000 or visit the website tynetheatreandoperahouse.uk to buy tickets today. You can also catch me on the North East Footy Breakfast Show live on Toon Radio weekdays 7 till 9 a.m. on DAB, smart speakers and thetoonuk.com. Welcome back to NUFC Matters. There's a multitude of things we could discuss tonight, but we don't have enough time. The Amigos is slightly earlier on Friday, 4:30. We will probably touch on a few of the other pointers that people have asked us to talk about on that show. But do want to talk about Steve Bruce. Captain Keith Hart said, Steve Bruce, discuss. He's at it again, Mitch. And he was talking about FFP. He says, we talk about FFP. The club would never be in any distress under Mike Ashley. It was a greatly run club under Mike. And I know I'm going to get slaughtered for that. The big thing is we never had a lot of money to spend. We would spend exactly what the club generated, but that was never going to be enough to be successful. And in a similar interview, he finally showed his true colours by saying that the Manchester United job is the one he always wanted. That's because you're a Manchester United fan, Steve. But yeah, you know, he's honestly, he's since he left the club, he's constantly talking about us, isn't he? And it's such a strange situation for somebody to have such an obsession with a football club that he clearly doesn't like.
He's, well, to have me say on Twitter after the week, if he's someone who was fantastic at revising history to make himself look brilliant.
Yeah.
And for some reason, he seems to be given a platform to do so. And nobody ever pushes back on that and say, no, Steve, that's not right. You can't say in one hand, the club was fantastically run, and then in the other, we didn't have the money to compete. Which one is it? And where was the investment? We had zero. Was it 10 million capex and zero net investment over a 13-year period? We're actually damn lucky that we didn't go down to the Championship one time and stay there. Mm-hmm. We got lucky twice. Once with Hughton and once with Rafa. And for him to turn around and come out with that and say, yeah, I'm going to get... play the victim card again. Play the victim card again, Steve. It, on the back of Amanda having to back down from what you said in Saudi the other week, he feels that he's got free rein to have a little pop. We see you, Steve. We know. The players knew. Everybody knew. And it's TalkSport loves stuff like this because they get a bit of traction and a bit of clickbait. And yet somebody somewhere will be stupid enough to give him another job because they'll fall for it all, because he's platformed, because he's got mates in the media who'll let him go and say what the hell he wants. The guy really now, for us, is utterly irrelevant on the trajectory we're on, and we need to be allowed to put him to bed. And when somebody gives him a platform to spout shite, we really need somebody to push back and give him questions that we know he can't answer. Mm. It's super frustrating. Like I say, I'd love to see what his opinion on apartheid in South Africa is, or what his opinion on race riots in Brixton were, because I tell you what, they'd be very different to what the actual truth is.
Yeah, I love this, Les. The fact he thought Mitro played while he was there and couldn't remember Perez says it all, George. And that's the thing with Steve Bruce. He hasn't just got selective memory, George. He just reinvents things.
Well, I said it a couple of years ago. What the lad needs to spend a couple of hundred grand of all the redundancies had, the millions in redundancies he's had, and get a good psychiatrist to get him sorted out, because that's what's the matter with him. He's living in a parallel universe. Anybody that stood at that training ground when he was the manager and seen what went on could see what was happening. I've told you all, they used to sometimes come through my street, and it's not the first time I've seen Dwight Gale sitting on my garden fence at the bottom of my front garden, heaving his guts off because he'd run 3,000 metres. Everybody in the world knew that the last thing Dwight Gale needed was to run 3,000 metres. His legs wouldn't do 300 metres, never mind 3,000. And that was regular occurrence. He went to Hong Kong when he was appointed and had a mini Olympics where day after day they were running all sorts of things. And then he used to have his Olympics at Teesside when he started the season, where they started with 100 metres, 200, 400, 800, 1,500, then 3,000. To what end? Some of those players had... Well, people like Wilson, and if thank God he never got hold of the new centre forward, because his groin and his thigh muscles would be shattered with all that sort of dinosaur training that they had. Yes, there's got to be basic fitness, but there's ways of getting it other than just running, because you do other damage, and that's the legacy that man left. And anybody that stood outside that ground could see it happening. And as regards his comments about Ashley, well, Mike Ashley did one thing, in my view. He didn't leave with a heap of debt because he didn't spend any bloody money. That's why he didn't leave with a heap of debt. It's just straightforward as that. Mike Ashley missed an opportunity to be a hero. If he'd spent $100 million, he could have been a hero on Tyneside, especially when Rafa was begging for it that January when he was desperate for some support to make sure we got promoted. And it didn't happen. And the number of times he came on the television to say how it was going to change, nothing changed. Nothing changed. It was just the same. And it didn't change because they had the right man running the team, the right man that would do what he was told, which was nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I lose the fact that Steve Bruce is a Wall's End lad gets my goat. And it really does. And all right, I shouldn't have said Brian Watson was a local scout who used to who brought Peter Beardsley in and him and Peter Fairley and one or two other players, Steve Watson, and all of them, they had lots of players. I went to attend a match, a testimonial match at Wall's End Boys Club, and we're all standing in a row. Who was there? Steve Howie, Steve Bruce, a whole load of them, and little George Mitchell at the end. And somebody said, there's the best centre-half that ever left Wall's End. And they're all looking at Steve Bruce, and Brian Watson said, no, George Mitchell. No, I'm not telling lies. That's true. That's true. And I've never forgotten it, as you can see. But for him, a Wall's End lad, to be doing what he's doing now, I just find absolutely disgraceful. Absolutely. And where's his professionalism? Where's his integrity to keep coming out with this stuff? He hasn't got anybody. He needs a man with a white coat to put him right.
I've got to say, Kev, every time we talk about Steve Bruce, I think it's going to be the last time. But I should know better, shouldn't I? He's on a merry-go-round of interviews, and every now and then it's another exclusive about Newcastle. And it's funny. I tend not to think about him on a regular basis, but you know the fact that Amanda had to more or less retract her statement. I should have known that Bruce wouldn't be far around the corner with another reinvention of history. But you know his lack of knowledge about when he was here doesn't surprise us.
Again, I don't really want to talk about him, to be honest, because it's getting boring. To be
fair.
Just regurgitation, dinosaur. Says the same stuff at every club that he was at about the previous and tries to get, you know, bashes the other club, Palace, Sunderland, West Brom, where Birmingham, wherever he's been, just to find him, land himself his dream job, whatever that is, manager of Greg's. I don't know. It's just irrelevant. He's just irrelevant. And I don't, even though he's a Wall's End lad and I'm a Crammy lad, so we've got a bit of a little history there with Wall's End Boys Club and Cranland Juniors and stuff like that. So I'm not going about that, but no, not just because he's from Wall's End. But no, I just think it's just crap and it's clickbait and it's a waste of time giving 3 minutes of my life talking about him.
Yeah.
Magnus, Steve Bruce, what's your feelings on his latest utterings?
Yeah, no, I mean, I find it absolutely pathetic. I'm going to agree with Kevin and not waste too much breath on it. If it's okay, maybe I can go on to the topic of the internationals a little bit. I don't know if that's okay. Or
yeah, go on, Magnus. You do what you want, mate. If you don't want to speak about Steve,
okay. Well, the fact of the matter is that Iceland is on their way to Wembley, and we will be seeing. This is why I'm wearing blue today. And the fact of the matter, we are going to be sending you off to the Euros as a last friendly game at Wembley. So we are on our way to Wembley. On the other hand, we're playing Israel tomorrow in a playoff. You know, believe it or not, we are playing Israel as a semi-final to hopefully get to a game against either Bosnia or Ukraine. So, I mean, it kind of changed the perspective. Obviously, I'm only talking about this because Anthony Gordon is on the team now. the perspective of the game will be totally different if we are both on our way to the Euros, and we have a little bit of a hope, and I urge you guys to watch the game if you have the chance. I think it's only being shown on Viaplay, there's a couple of players that I've already mentioned on the show. There is one of them playing at Genoa that has been actually smashing it in Serie A with Genoa hitting 2 goals and 4 assists in 29 games. And he's the son of the crazy commentator that actually lost it against you in 2016. But we have a whole new generation of players. We're hoping to make it, but it's not going to be easy. Neither of the game, only one game at a time. We have also the other guy that has been mentioned on the show, Arnór Sigurðsson, that played pretty well against Newcastle it was the cup game against Blackburn, and he actually had a pretty good game against you. This is only a few names that I want to mention because I'd like you guys. You're probably going to watch Wales or also Saudi Arabia are playing at the same time. So they take nothing off. Everybody wants to watch their own nation. And there's also a fellow called Andre Gudjonsson that is a son of Idar Gudjonsson. So these are. Both Albert Gudmundsson and Andre Gudjonsson could be good strikers to look at in the future because we are lacking in that department. And here are two fellas that could be good, either number two or number three in the striking department of Newcastle. So, you know, I'm always linking my talks to Newcastle if we are to go to the Euros, then who knows? I might actually come to Wembley. I don't know if you guys are going, but this international window is a little bit more exciting for us than maybe you guys, because you're just doing friendlies. We have a life and death game tomorrow night against Israel.
Yeah, well, good luck to Iceland. You've managed to swerve Steve Bruce brilliantly there, Magnus. I've got to say, wow. some of us love the international football. Some of us support Scotland. Al-Waleed. Al-Waleed doesn't support Scotland. He supports Saudi Arabia. But Al-Waleed, yeah. Steve Bruce, any last-minute views on Steve Bruce from you? Anything you want to say?
Actually, I found the video or the link for the show, but I said to myself, let's watch something useful. So I didn't. I passed it. I didn't watch. So I'm not really sure what he said, but I don't know. I'm still waiting. When will Ghana forget totally about him? I didn't know when.
I think what you should do, Al-Waleed, is invite him to Saudi for a talking. I think you do a great job taking him around. Yeah, he could do some great talkings there. Be ambassador for Newcastle United out there. He'd do a great job.
Tajikistan tomorrow, right? Saudi are playing Tajikistan around the same time, right?
Yeah.
Good luck with that, guys. Good luck with that, man. I hope you beat them.
Yeah, it's for World Cup. Yeah, World Cup qualify.
Yeah, good stuff.
It's looking good for you guys.
Jules says I'm cheeky. I think that was the reference to Scotland, Stu.
It was, but I wouldn't be one to say a game against Israel's life or death at the moment, but that's another story. We'll move on from that. What we have to accept regarding the Steve Bruce thing is we are national news, and bad news sells better than good news.
Yeah.
And we're going to get used a lot more of it, whether it's through our owners or through our injuries, but the fact that we haven't won, people rejoice in misery, and that's basically how it is. And Steve Bruce, I half expect him to say that, well, you know, we didn't have this injury list under me. That's because I never trained Steve. You were never there. So he's probably right, they didn't have an injury list under him. But I thought we might have talked about today's other news, which was the NFTs. And I know you'll cover that on Friday, no doubt, but when I seen this at Newcastle United NFT, I actually thought, right, because I've been back home, I'm all jordified again. I thought it was a a Jody version or a synopsis of Darren Eales' statement in January. An NFT meant me effing transfers. Well, we knew that anyway. Why tell us in March that there's no transfers in January? But clearly not. It was about us getting some sponsors. And now apparently that's a bad thing as well. You know, like we've said, if people don't have something to moan about, they're not happy. You know, there's more important things going on in life. And the fact that they've reached out, it's just the tip of the iceberg, no pun intended, Magnus. And good luck with your games as well. It'd be great if you can get to the Euros because you've got fantastic fans there in Iceland. The Thunderclap's world famous now because of your luck. So I really hope that next time Steve Bruce comes out with it, and we know that he's going to be on, he's got friends in the media. We know that through his Man United connections. And we know he's going to spout bollocks. Let's not just bait to him and just ignore him. Because whoever's problem he is next, he definitely won't be our problem. And that's just the way I look at it with Steve Bruce.
Steve, he's at it again, isn't he? And we've had an apology in the chat from the lad who asked us to discuss Steve Bruce. But we had to discuss it because it is such a talking point.
It is, yeah. I mean, and that's it. I think everything's been covered, hasn't it? You know, I actually did play against him quite a number of times, schoolboy football. Never forgiven the bloke. He got selected to be a ball boy in the 76 League Cup final because the Chronicle were running the competition, and then Northumberland FA stepped in and Newcastle Schoolboys, and the selected Newcastle Schoolboys in the end and threw the Chronicles competition out the window. So none of us were in with a chance. And he actually was one of the Newcastle ball boys at the 76 Cup final, believe it or not. But another story, another game. Magnus, whoa, let's get it going, son. Let's get it going.
Yeah,
let's do it.
It was Captain Kivar who brought it up. He says, wasn't it Cracker Jack where people had to hold loads of cabbages? Yeah, double a drop, it was called, Captain Kivar. Yeah. There's the one from the past. Okay, we've got time maybe for one more question. And it was George Bainbridge who asked this one. So I have to be quick fire this one, lads, so we can get finished on time. Question for the panel. Who do you think will damage the Premier League the most? Greedy owners, spoiled brat players, or politicians of any hue? Steve Hasty will give you the first one on this. Who's gonna damage?
Give Steve that question first.
Yeah, we're gonna give Steve Hasty that one. Who's gonna damage the Premier League the most, Steve?
Politicians, without a question of a doubt, no problem. I've said it. I sound like Simon Jordan at times because the proper regulator of the football is the FA, and they abdicate their responsibilities. But to allow politicians to now step in and appoint a regulator and that type of thing, for me it's a disaster. I think I just can't see the benefit. I know that we'll have people that'll throw out the fact that you've got clubs like Bury that could have gone to the wall and such, you know, that type of thing, and you know, dubious owners. You look at what happened to Newcastle under Mike Ashley over 14 years, yet you'd speak to anyone and other than a Newcastle fan and say that he did wonders for the football club. All of that type of thing. It's rivalry. It's probably the only industry in the world that where the customer has a say in how the company's run, or wants to have a say in how the company's run. There are ways and means of protecting a football club, but to bring politicians in and to start to bring in a regulator in the manner that they're doing, I think is honest, putting football on a slippery slope, to be perfectly honest. That's my opinion. It also gives you, once politicians get involved, then a political flavor can very, very easily come into decisions. We talk about owners. We talk about, you know, foreign owners. We talk about Americans. We talk about Russians. We talk about people from the Middle East and the Far East. But there's nobody more dubious in my opinion, than a politician.
Okay. What's your take on this, Stu?
I always say the same thing. It's not just about football. It's about everything in life. When you've got something good, rather than enjoy it, people with greed kill it. and greed kills everything. And what is going under the radar a lot, whether it's through xenophobia or very well-placed people in the media, is the Americanization of the English Premier League. And that's my opinion. I think it's greed that's killing it, and the owners are falling for it. They're getting fed a carrot. And they say, oh, let's blame the bad Arabs. That's what we'll do. Or we'll blame the people in the Far East. The people that and the good people in the UK don't know least about in general. You know, they're very familiar with the American people and everything else. But you see some of the changes that have been implemented, and they're very much American influenced. And if you look at the amount of owners in the league, it's now half, I believe it's half the league's owned by Americans. We're at a stage now where it is a tipping point, and it's going to be a takeover in plain sight of what is the world's great game, unless people stand up for it like they did, like the supporters did for the ESL. And it is all coming to a head now, isn't it? Same with the financial fair play, it's coming to a head. So to answer the question, I think greed. So put owners, greedy owners, is what's going to cause either the come down or the breakdown of what's happening in the football.
Al-Waleed, who do you think will cause the most damage? Footballers, politicians, owners?
Well, it's a little bit of this and that. Behind the scene people, the who's defend the top six. Of course, the politics, and especially for me, is keep changing the rules. Keep changing the rules. It's affecting really the league.
Okay, Magnus.
Yeah, in my opinion, I agree that it's the politicians. It is greed that is ruining the game already, and I didn't even really want to go too much into politics. But you know, we all know what's going on in Israel and Palestine. But we're trying to only play football. You know, some people have said to us we shouldn't even show up to that game against Israel. But I think it's in the power of other people to either expel them or remove them. Either FIFA or UEFA should be removing them, not us, you know, not showing up. We are here to try to qualify to the game. I think it's the answer to your question is politicians and politics. And greed.
Definitely agree with him.
Okay, good answers. Kev?
I think it would be politicians. Half of them can't even run a country properly, so stick to that rather than dipping the finger in to other pies and regulating a well-established football association or whatever, the game football that we've been since Eton back in the 1800s. So why get involved now? Yes, it's greed. So I think stick to what they know and not get your mucky fingers into the game of football that we love.
George?
Well, politicians are going to be a mess for us. We don't really need them. But Stu's right. The rug's already pulled from under our feet by the American finance influence. And look how deep they want to dig when they want to look at the finances regarding our club. They'd go to the ends of the earth to try and prove that that's all wrong. Why don't they dig a bit deeper at some of the money that these Americans are bringing into the country? Where they're coming from? The guys that are involved in Liverpool are involved with the Teamsters. Anybody heard of the Teamsters? Well, the Teamsters got rid of Kennedy. That's how powerful they were. So, you know, don't tell us that they're all shining white, the ones that are doing it now. The politicians, big word of warning. Notice what they said. Independent regulator. Independent regulator tripe. For 15 years, I worked with the Home Office as a volunteer, and two of the people I worked with closely was the independent independent examiner for the probation services and the independent chief inspector for the prison service. Michael Howard was their boss. He wrote the agenda and handed it to them and said, deliver that for me. That's how independent we're. And that's how independent this regulator will be from the government for football. Somebody in Whitehall, civil servant, will write the agenda and say, that's what we want. And it won't serve us. It won't serve the game. It'll just serve their own political ends.
And last, but by no means least, Mitch, your views.
Agenda. That's the word. The minute you get a politician involved in anything, there's an agenda to deliver something somewhere for somebody and to get something in return. That's how the greasy world of politics works, unfortunately. As fans, we are repeatedly, like Magnus has touched on, repeatedly handed the mantle of being the moral arbiter of football. You shouldn't go to that game. You should protest against this. You should stop doing that. Bollocks. We just want to watch our team. We just want to watch our team win and enjoy our sport. What an independent regulator will be able to do is take advantage of the one thing that me and Steve Hastie have talked about on this channel for a number of years now. Football clubs have this massive inability to work together towards a common goal because one of them will always break ranks and look after themselves. And there's the weak spot. We have an inability to work together to stop these things from happening. We have a body in the FA who should be the overall arbiter of the game, who are worse than a paper tiger. They're not even a paper kitten. They've sold their soul. They've sold their soul to television, even, in terms of what they're going to do next year with the FA Cup, taking it off of free-to-air broadcast, something at some stage not so long ago they promised would never happen. It's never going to happen. We're never going to take the game away from the people. Bollocks. And that's the problem we face. It's not necessarily the independent arbiter or the agenda. It's the fact that football repeatedly shows that they can't work together to stop things happening. And that's why we're in the mess we're in at the Premier League now. And the only thing that might, just might, bring them together is if any independent regulator says to all of the Premier League teams, right, you go to a European Super League, you're going to hurt. And then they might want to work together to make the Premier League even bigger and better. And then they might take the shackles off and say, right, we need all the money from Saudi. And we need all the money from everywhere else because we want it coming here and not going over there. But that, again, self-interest, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest challenge that anybody faces. And an independent regulator appointed by the government will have an agenda and will be able to use that because the clubs show repeatedly they can't work together to solve the problem.
Yeah, and remember what's happening is that the independent regulator, you look at the Premier League, you look at the FA, they hold the golden share. They're basically handing it to the regulator, and that's handing it to politicians, and how those politicians will then use that golden share to suit the political agenda of the day. That's another hidden danger that's never been discussed.
And you tell me the deal that West Ham got for the stadium wasn't a political deal as well. They got that huge stadium for next to nothing. They pay a peppercorn rent. And look at what we've had to put into our club to get a stadium that we've got. Ain't going to happen. And it was pure politics that did that deal. Karen Brady was given a place in the House of Lords, and the other two were given gongs, and they were given the ground.
I know we're running out of time, but like another point is that you look at Man City and the 115 charges that they're up against. By then, the regulator will have come in. What happens if Man City get thrown out of the Premier League? Where do they go? Do they go to the Championship? Do they go to League One? Do they go to League Two? Do they go to Northern League? Do they go to some other league? At what point does it stop? At what point will the regulator step in and go, oh, well, we think that because of you being naughty, you should slot in there? What does that say? So the whole, this is where the regulator is going to have to grow something that nobody's ever had before, and it's the regulator. They're going to dump it on them, and the regulator will abdicate their responsibilities straight away.
And can I give the final word to Stu, because we've got to wind it up now. Stu did want to say something, George. We're already 5 minutes over time, and I promised I would finish at 7. So, no, Stu,
I was just agreeing with George, because when I was at the Man City game, I was speaking to man one of their fans on the way up, and I says, "Hey, it's been a while since I've been at the Commonwealth Stadium." And he's like, "No, it's the Etihad Campus. It's Etihad Campus." So it all goes along there. But take that one side. I just want to thank everyone who sent the best wishes regarding the family issue I've been dealing with the last few days. Everyone I've tried to reply to, and if I haven't, I'm sorry, but thank you. They all mean a lot. Much appreciated. Yeah,
go on, George. We'll give you the final word, because you were keen. I could see you were busting the gut to get your last word in, George. Go on.
Well, it just the fact that once again, who suffers in all of this? The fans. The fans. Always. We're second last all the bloody time, and last most of the time. And no thought about what doing the fans are doing. And this, in regards to the FA, the mess about with the FA Cup, the envy of the whole bloody world, and they're messing and messing about with it and trying to change it for no good reason at all.
Great stuff, as always. Thank you to Steve, to Stu, to Al Waleed, to Magnus, to Kev, to George and to Mitch. Thanks to all the moderators and everybody in the chat. Really good show there again tonight, as always. I'm back tomorrow, 6 o'clock, with Super Mac and Gibbo. And don't forget, the Amigos is slightly earlier on Friday, 4:30. Take care, guys.
Good luck.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, everyone. Nice to meet you.